although the actual goal of life is to become free from such activities. Therefore, the Vedic injunctions indirectly lead one to the path of ultimate liberation by first prescribing fruitive religious activities, just as a father promises his child candy so that the child will take his medicine. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhava Arjuna. The Vedas apparently offer fruitive results within the three modes of material nature. Those who perform ritualistic ceremonies or austerities in the mode of goodness are offered the chance for promotion to the higher planetary systems called Svargaloka. Aishnanti Divyan, Ashnanti Divyan Divideva Bhogan. Similarly, those who perform Karma Kanda or fruitive religious activities in the mode of passion are allowed to become great rulers or wealthy men on earth and enjoy great prestige and earthly power. But as stated in the Manu Samhita, Pravruttir Esha Bhutanam Nivruttistu Mahafala. Although fruitive religious activities are very much popular among the conditioned souls, the actual perfection of life is achieved when one gives up all fruitive endeavor. If a father tells his child, you must take this medicine by my order, the child may become fearful and rebellious and reject the medicine. Therefore, the father entices his child by saying, I'm going to give you a delicious piece of candy, but if you want this candy, first just take this little bit of medicine, then you can have the candy. Such indirect persuasion is called parokshavada, or an indirect description that conceals the actual purpose. The father presents his proposal to the child as if the ultimate goal were to receive the candy and only a minor condition must be fulfilled to receive it. Actually, however, the father's goal is to administer the medicine to the child and cure him of his disease, thus describing the primary purpose indirectly and concealing it with a secondary proposal is called parokshavada, or indirect persuasion. Since the great majority of conditioned souls are addicted to sense gratification, pravruttir esha bhutanam, the Vedic karmakanda rituals offer them a chance to become free from temporary materialistic sense gratification by making them greedy for fruitive Vedic results such as promotion to heaven or a powerful ruling position on earth. In all Vedic rituals, Vishnu is worshipped and thus one is gradually promoted to the understanding that one's actual self-interest is to surrender to Vishnu. Nata vidhu swartha gatim hi Vishnum. Such an indirect method is prescribed for balanam, those who are childish or foolish. An intelligent person can immediately understand by direct analysis the actual purpose of Vedic literature as described by the Lord himself. Vedaischa sarvai aham eva vedya. All Vedic knowledge ultimately aims at achieving shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without such shelter, one must rotate within the 8,400,000 species offered by the illusory energy of the Lord. Ordinary material vision, either through gross sense perception or the subtle perception of rational induction, always yields imperfect knowledge, distorted by the desire for illusory material enjoyment. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that the cultivation of impersonal self-realization is also a disturbance to the conditioned souls, since the impersonal speculative process is an artificial attempt to become completely formless. Such an attempt is not at all in accord with the proper judgment of the Vedas, which is described in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaishya Sarvai Aham Eva Vedya. In Lord Chaitanya's movement, there is no need to childishly pursue fruitive material results and gradually be dragged to actual knowledge. According to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Gati Anyatha. In Kali Yuga, life is very short, Prayena Alpa Yushaha, and people are generally undisciplined, Mandaha, misguided, Sumandamatayaha, and overwhelmed by the unfavorable results of their previous activities, Mandabhagya. Thus, their minds are never peaceful, upadrutaha. And their very brief lifespan vitiates the possibility of their gradually progressing to the path of Vedic ritualistic activities. Therefore, the only hope is to chant the holy names of the Lord, Hare Nama. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12.351, it is stated, Kale dosha nidhe rajan asti hi ekva mahan gunah, kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha param rajet. Kali Yuga is an ocean of hypocrisy and pollution. In Kali Yuga, all natural elements are polluted, such as water, earth, sky, mind, intelligence, and ego. The only auspicious aspect of this fallen age is the process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. Astihi ekam mahan gunaha. simplify the delightful process of Krishna Kirtan, one is freed from his connection to this fallen age, Mukta Sangha, and goes back home, back to Godhead, Param Rajet. Sometimes the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement also use the paroksha or indirect method of persuasion, offering a nice transcendental sweet to the conditioned soul to entice him to come to the lotus feet of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is kevala ananda kanda, simply blissful. But by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even one who is indirectly attracted to the Krishna consciousness movement achieves very quickly the perfection of life and goes back home, back to Godhead. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. It is very impressive to read these purports. We have the disciples of Srila Prabhupada sifting through the various different acharyas, translating the Sanskrit, imagine the amount of effort, translating the Sanskrit commentaries. Then they're under tremendous pressure to make sure that they're consistent with the tradition. So they really have to know the entire philosophy, which means they have read all the books of Srila Prabhupada. And then they produce such cogent analysis that I don't have any need to give a lecture anymore. Yeah. Should we go home? I have a kirtan. Not much to say, because it's just a comprehensive analysis. But thankfully it was short enough that I could read all of it. So, I'm wondering what I should do here. Whether I should expand on this or we should just have a discussion. What should we do? Janmashtami Prabhu, Hindi. Why not have a discussion? I knew you were going to say that. So maybe I'll lecture for 15 minutes, then we have a discussion. How's that? So we have to, I do my duty also, lecturing. So, many things come to mind here. The Bhagavatam is essentially an expansion, you could say, not expansion, what's the word? It's a more detailed analysis of the same concepts that are in the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, every time I come to Bhagavatam class, I can see mappings one to one between the Gita and the Bhagavatam. This is an example today. Even though this is karma yoga or karma kanda, the third chapter does the same progression, exactly almost identical progression. So how does it start? Devan bhavayatanena te devaha bhavayantu vaha parasparam bhavayantaha shreha paramavapsatha. Krishna starts to say, well, you can't stay for a second without doing something, and you're not interested in doing things which are without desire for material results, then what should you do? Then at least perform the Vedic rituals. Devan, please the devatas. And by pleasing them, what will happen is, parasparam bhavantaha shreyah paramavapsatha. You will benefit each other mutually. That means you perform some Vedic rituals, some sacrifices, offer it to the devatas. The devatas will then give you the fruit of that. Because this is the cycle of life. At least recognize that there is a cycle of life, that we are dependent on something higher. There are devatas that are controlling every motion, every action of our bodies. The blinking of our eyelids is not under our control. There is a devata for that. Moving of my hands, my speaking. So acknowledge that there is a higher power. And then of course, after explaining this, Krishna makes the point that, let's see if I can remember. Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi brahma akshara samudbhavam tasmat sarvagatam brahma nityam yadne pratishthitam. All these actions, karma, where is it coming from? Brahmodbhavam vidhi, from the Vedas. And where are the Vedas coming from? Brahma akshara samudbhavam. They are coming from akshara, infallible. Prabhupada translates it as Vishnu or Krishna. Tasvat sarvagatam brahma nityam yadne pratishtitam. Therefore, whatever, even material activities done with material desire, if they are in the Vedic fold, they are situated in sacrifice. So the, as was mentioned in the purport, slowly one will become, one will see the fruitlessness of fruitive activities, and therefore turn towards either jnana or bhakti. So the question was, why is this karma yoga given? The Bhagavatam is saying, like a candy, an enticement, do this, and as they come into the Vedic fold, then you can, they'll get the opportunity to hear about higher topics, not just dharma, artha, kama, sattva, raja, tama, but moksha, Nirguna. Now, in the 25th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of the 11th canto, Krishna starts to discuss various things like karma, jnana, bhakti, what is their place. And karma is in sattva guna, the mode of goodness, nishkam karma yoga, I mean, which is going to be the topic in the coming verses. And jnana is in the mode of goodness. Krishna says there, work performed as an offering to me is in the mode of goodness. It's very clear in the verses in 11.25. So, things done in the mode of goodness cannot transcend the modes because they are under the modes. Correct? So, karma yoga is useless for us as devotees because we want to transcend. The only method that can transcend is bhakti, which is nirguna. It is beyond the material world. It is beyond the material modes of nature. Whereas jnana, which is a sattvic process, Krishna makes a beautiful distinction in the 25th chapter, which is going to come up soon. Well, not so soon, maybe. We're on the third chapter. But the 25th chapter says, you know, if you live in the city, mode of passion. You live in the forest, mode of goodness. You live in the temple, nirguna. You know. Or live in the area where Krishna is, then that's nirguna. Krishna continuously makes the distinction. No, this is bhakti, different from karma, different from jnana. No, these actions are of karma, distinct from the actions of bhakti. No, this knowledge, he says, knowledge of the soul is sattva, sattvic, but knowledge of me is transcendental. He makes this distinction. I find this 25th chapter very useful to read because it keeps my concept straight in my head. Now, of course, what happens is the lines, and of course, we know the definition of uttam bhakti. Uttam bhakti is anavritam, jnana karmadi anavritam, uncovered by karma and jnana. We are not karma yogis. We don't want to be karma yogis. We are not jnana yogis. We don't want to be jnana yogis. Say that again. Can I repeat? We are not karma yogis. We don't want to be karma yogis. Oh, before. What was I saying before? Uttama bhakti is favorable service done to Krishna, but it is uncovered by karma. And it is uncovered by jnana. So the secondary qualifying aspect of this definition of bhakti is that it is uncovered by karma and jnana both. So I was saying that we don't want to be karma yogis, we don't want to be jnana yogis. We don't offer results of our work to Krishna as a anga or a limb of bhakti. No, we do the action itself for Krishna. That's uttam bhakti. Offering it is in the mode of goodness. According to the 25th chapter of the 11th canto, work offered to me, without attachment, offered to me is a mode of goodness. In the 18th chapter also, we see the definition of karma yoga in the same way. So 18th chapter also beautifully discusses this. Let me see if I can remember. Karyam iti evat karma niyatam kriyate arjuna sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva sa tyaga sattviko mataha. Sattviko. Sattva guna. What is it? That there is some action that should be performed. Karyam. The word karya is very interesting in Sanskrit. It means it ought to be performed. So we do something, we do our duty because it ought to be done. Okay, not because we want something out of it. That's nishkam karma yoga. Karyam iti eva yat karma niyatam kriyate arjuna. But the additional requirement is it should be niyatam. Niyatam means prescribed. Nitya karma, which is in the Vedas. Not any activity. I get into my car, that doesn't qualify for Nishkam Karma Yoga. Niyatam Kriyate Arjun, Sangam Tyaktva Phalam Chaiva, and I'm not attached to the results of my actions, then that is Nishkam Karma Yoga. And Krishna makes this explains this also in the Bhagavad Gita. So I always find these amazing consistencies between the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, all over and over again. And the number one thing I'm beginning to recognize these days is that bhakti is a revolutionary, orthogonal process to everything that's there. It's completely different. It's not of this world. It's not of sattva-guna. It's not of raja-guna. It's not of tamaguna. So, jnana karmadi anavritam, uncovered. Now, what about this example of candy and slow progression? In the 25th chapter, or maybe it's in the 24th, I can't remember. There is an extraordinary verse. It's a long commentary by different acharyas. which says that those who are very attached to the material world are qualified for karma yoga. Those who are very detached from the material world are qualified for jnana yoga. And those who are neither too detached from the material world and neither too attached to the material world are qualified for bhakti yoga. So it's a question of qualification, as this verse is explaining, that, well, you're not really interested, so do this, because you're so materially attached, at least do this. It's a question of qualification. That's why karma, jnana, ashtanga and everything is present in those things. But then the question is, if it's a question of qualification, don't we say that everybody is qualified for bhakti? Whether high, whether low, whether mode of passion, mode of ignorance, mode of sattva, we say that everybody is qualified for bhakti. How can you say that, you know, those who are very attached to the material world are not qualified for bhakti? So I have a few thoughts on that. One is that the pure devotee can create our qualification. Prabhupada kept saying this, has said this many times. I created your qualification. So the pure devotee creates a sense of detachment, vairagya, by his association. And that's transcendental. I mean, these are not sattva, rajatama considerations. So now, the other aspect is, sometimes the person might take up bhakti, but continues to be qualified for, or continues to have material attachments, or takes up bhakti, but has an inordinate amount of vairagya. Heart becomes hard, very hard. Jnana, rejection, 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 material world. Or it continues to be attached to the material things. Or there were material desires, they went away transiently, transitorily, because we performed bhakti, and they came back again with a vengeance. So what do we do? Well, the thing to recognize is that we should continue to perform bhakti, recognizing that it's no longer pure. It's no longer pure. But it's still bhakti. Because it's predominant in our practices, and there's some mixture of material desires, and there might be mixtures of jnana and other elements. But in those cases, then there are instructions to elevate our, to control ourselves, try to do material things, which means try to come up to sattva guna. Right? So our bhakti is becoming choked or covered over by our material desires or by inordinate amounts of detachment, which was never the purpose of bhakti. In bhakti, the heart has to become soft, not hard. In bhakti, one has to see everybody as Krishna's devotee, not make distinctions. That will come at higher stages, of course, in bhava and prema. So, what happens? We perform mixed bhakti, which is okay. We should recognize we're performing mixed bhakti, but we should continue to perform bhakti because akama sarva kama va moksha kama idharadihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether we have material desires, we don't have material desires. Akamo, sarva kamo va, moksha kamo. Or we are jnanis, we desire liberation. Still, tivrena bhakti yogena. Hold on to bhakti with every ounce of your strength, because that bhakti will have effect. Okay? And so, my analysis of the early days of Srila Prabhupada's movement, and also later on, Prabhupada's instructions, where he would say, well, bring yourself to at least sattva guna, at least become a Brahmin, at least do this, control your senses. All these things are actually not limbs of bhakti. Right? They're not limbs. Bhakti doesn't say cultivate sattvic qualities. The angas of bhakti are shravanam, kirtanam. That's the anga of bhakti. To kirtan, listen to Krishna. Or if you look at the five main things, nama sankirtana, sadhu sanga, madhura vas, Shimutira Shadhaya Sevana, Bhagavat Shravan, these don't say cultivate qualities, cultivate qualities, cultivate qualities. Why? This is Uttam Bhakti. But for people who are mixed, and this also is explained in the 25th or 26th chapters, I can give you the references, where this Krishna mentions these concepts. The one who has these mixtures should first come up, try to come up to sattva guna, and then perform bhakti. But is there a requirement that we must? I'm not sure, because Vritrasur is a demon, he's in Tamaguna, he's a pure devotee. Far more exalted than Indra, who is in Sattvaguna, who is fighting him. Far, far more. I mean, there's just no comparison. Vritrasur is Nirguna, although his body is in Tamaguna. It's not a requirement for bhakti. That's why I feel more and more these days that bhakti is just completely different. considerations are different from normal social conventions in society. Brahmins, Brahminical status, so important. Only the Brahmins can chant mantras, only the Brahmins can do this. And then what does Bhagavatam say? It throws a wrench in the works by saying, Aho bata shva pacho to gariyan yajibhagre vartate namatubhyam te pustapah te juhu shashnur arya brahmanachu nam grananti yete. Forget about the Brahmins. Anybody who is even a dog eater's family, by which I understand that he is eating the dogs, chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that person has already done in previous lives all the Brahminical things that need to be done. He's already transcended Brahminical regulations. So this is the concept over and over again. Although there is some pause for caution, what should we do? Like I said, if we have karma or jnana mixed in, we have to cultivate these other things also as a secondary process with the process of bhakti. But if we have no other karma, jnana considerations, we have firm faith, which is the key, shraddha, which is transcendental, built by the guru in the process of bhakti, then we should just continue doing uttam bhakti and forget about anything else. So this is the way I view these different concepts and how they interrelate with each other. But one thing is for sure, karma and jnana yoga and ashtanga yoga are useless processes from the point of view of the bhaktas, from the point of view of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Only bhakti can take us beyond the modes of material nature, take us back to Krishna, bring us back to Krishna. And Prabhupada's society is meant for uttam bhakti. It is meant to make us uttam bhaktas. Prabhupada is even pure devotion to us. So I'll stop here, my 15 minutes of fame, and then we have a discussion. To you, Prabhuji. But please wait for the microphone because there are people who are listening. No, it's not working. Turn it on. Yeah, but I think people won't hear, and then I get complaints that they couldn't hear. Unless you want to use this microphone. Maybe I'll repeat the question. Yeah, go on.
And there it says that some scholars that they recommend that jnana and karma are important parts of devotional service, but Prabhupada, he translates for Rupa Goswami that actually this is not a fact. That although they may help to gain a foothold in Krishna consciousness, they may ultimately come to be rejected because devotional service depends on just the sentiment or the desire for such service. And then you talked about the heart getting harder, rejection, rejection, rejection. In the next paragraph, it actually talks about that. It says that too much of these other two things just simply make the heart harder and harder. So I just thought that was a nice reference there in the next devotion. And the other thing I would like to mention, you were talking about how devotional service was separate from the, say, the three modes of nature, acting in the three modes. But then I was thinking about the from the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I think it's the 13th chapter, the three modes of material nature. Is that correct?
It's the 14th.
There, it talks about how you may be in the modes of nature, but as soon as you understand what Krishna is telling you there, that only the modes exist, that you're not attached to enlightenment. You're not running away from passion. You're not either attracted or detached from, ignorance. That as soon as you reach that consciousness, then you immediately transcend the three modes of material nature. So in a sense, they're not separate. It's just a matter of consciousness. It's only a matter of coming to understand the three modes of material nature. And when you completely understand them and you're not affected by them, then immediately everything we do
can be. This is an important point. Maybe I can respond to this. The verse you're citing is Prakasham cha pravruttim cha mohameva cha pandava na drishti samprabruttani na nivrittani kamshti. But the important point here is that mam cha yo abhyabhicharena bhakti yogina sevate so gunan samatityatam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Only that person who performs my undeviating unalloyed devotional service can transcend the modes. So what is transcending the modes? Now, the jnanis have the idea that they can transcend the modes. Aham brahmasmi, tattvamasi, the soul is beyond material nature. But that knowledge still remains in sattva-guna. The jnanis also have the idea that I can observe what's happening to me. Observe. Oh, the sattva-guna is rising. I'm not going to be affected. Udasi nivat asi, no. Rajaguna is rising. Not going to be affected. I'm going to observe it. As an observer, then I am nirguna. But the problem is, the bhaktas say, that without Krishna, no nirguna is possible. Because I can observe myself all I want, I can do all the mental gymnastics I want, but if I don't have divine help, what does Krishna say? Daivihi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mameva ya prapadyante. Only those who worship me, maya metam karantite. Not those people who can use their mental faculties to observe themselves. To be in knowledge is not sufficient. What one needs is Krishna's help, which cannot be got by any other process than bhakti. So when we are connected with Krishna, in the 25th chapter again it's explained, food that's cooked, there is food in the mode of goodness, the food in the mode of passion. The food that's offered to me and then accepted is in the mode of, is a transcendental. So bhakti emphasizes the transcendental aspects, which a lot of the jnanis think they don't need Krishna for. They think I can become nirguna without Krishna, not possible. The bhakta's insistence is only by worshipping Krishna can this ability even to be able to observe ourselves arise. But the bhakta is not sitting idle observing or analyzing or calculating, oh, this is my sattva guna. He is spending or she is spending time serving Krishna, which is a transcendental method again. So you're right in the sense that the devotee is in a body that's buffeted by the modes of material nature. There's no escaping it, correct? But still, by serving Krishna, by being connected with Krishna directly, the devotee transcends even though he or she might be under the material modes. That's the method of bhakti.
There is one sentence in the first paragraph that kind of throws you off a little bit, because Prabhupada says, one who understands these three modes of nature through the process of speculation, I think he says, I'm not sure he says will become a realized soul, will become a pure devotee, will become Krishna conscious. I can't remember exactly, and I don't want to say without remembering.
Okay, sure.
But there is that statement.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to. Just use microphone, please.
It's Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the beginning of the paragraph, he said, I remember that. It says, philosophical speculation, that will lead you to devotion. But when you say speculation, that doesn't mean philosophical speculation. Speculation, generally we refer to mental speculation. On my own inference, not depending on the mercy. But philosophical speculation means Shastra is backing and I am under guidance of Guru. Then it is, yes, it will lead. Yeah, Prabhupada didn't say speculation. I remember that sentence. It says philosophical speculation.
More discussion from the Matajis? Anybody? Any thoughts? There's a hand up in the corner there. Then I'll come back to the Prabhus. The back.
Hey, Krishna.
Hey, Krishna.
Okay. My question is, if we perform, as I know that Bhakti Yoga is the top yoga that we can perform in this world, and it includes all different kind of yoga. So if we perform different kind of yoga with Krishna in the center, it's called Bhakti as well?
So we have to look at this is a good question. I'm not going to be able to answer it properly, but I'll try. So the question is, if you perform all the other yogas with Krishna in mind or Krishna at the center, will it be called bhakti? Now, first of all, if we perform Nishkam Karma Yoga, so why do people perform Karma Yoga? Kayana manasa buddhya kevalar indriya irapi yoginaha karma kurvanti sangam tyakva atma vishuddhaye. What this means is that by the body, by the mind, by the senses, the karma yogis perform activities of karma yoga for self-purification. There is no for Krishna. You see, that's why it's not bhakti. The actions are performed for purification. How is the purification happening? By offering the results of the activities to Krishna. But pleasing Krishna is not the goal. And so what happens to a karma yogi who has become successful in his or her practices? They become promoted to jnana yoga. And then the jnana yogi gets promoted to ashtanga yoga. So there's a hierarchy. So now, when a devotee is at home cooking, busy, have to go to work, child is crying. Okay, let me make something for the child. Maybe a good dal. She ate that yesterday and liked it. Let me cook that dal today. The activity is done for the child. She cooks and goes to the altar and offers the results to Krishna. Please take this bhoga. And then gives that bhoga as prasad to the child. Now what will this be? Well, it is jnana karma mishra bhakti. That means it is still bhakti because it is not Vedic prescribed duties. Niyata karma, kamya karma, naimita karma. It is not, cooking is not part of a Vedic ritual, you know, prescribed ritual for somebody. Any and every activity which is offered to Krishna, whether we are Krishna conscious or not, comes under bhakti. The person is a devotee. The majority or the practice is devotion. She's offering the bhoga not for self-purification, but because her guru told to do so, because Prabhupada gave that guidance. Correct? So the motivation is Krishna consciousness. There may not be Krishna consciousness in the activity. It might resemble superficially karma, yoga type activity because you offered the result to Krishna instead of bhakti where you cook for Krishna. Or what does Krishna like? A cook and then offer. So it's bhakti which is mixed in with some karma. It's mixed in with some jnana. But it's still bhakti. You cannot call it karma. Other yogas. You understand? You can perform bhakti, but you can mix in other small yogic processes. As long as bhakti is predominant, as long as you're doing everything under the Guru's guidance, and you know, inevitably we are mixed devotees, then it still qualifies as bhakti. But if we say, well, I'm going to perform Nishkam Karma Yoga for self-purification, or I'm going to do Jnana Yoga to realize the soul, and that's the only motivation, nothing else. It's pure jnana, it's pure karma, there's no bhakti in it at all. So that's why Krishna defines, so these are complex concepts. Krishna defines, if you offer work to me, that's in the mode of goodness. That's in the 11th canto, 25th chapter. Similarly, knowledge, the mode of goodness, etc. Is that okay? Now, Srila Prabhupada, when she translates Karma Yoga, he calls it action in divine consciousness, in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada translates Karma Yoga, which is normally understood as this mode of goodness, as action in Krishna consciousness. And we know action in Krishna consciousness is Uttama Bhakti. So Prabhupada gives us Uttama Bhakti on every page of the Srimad Bhagavad-gita. See, when I read the 25th chapter of the 11th canto, I began to get a little disillusioned with the Bhagavad-gita. Because I said, why is Krishna... Most of the Bhagavad-gita is irrelevant. Most of the Bhagavad-gita is irrelevant. It's not relevant. Six chapters on karma, six chapters on jnana. Only the six chapters on bhakti, 7 to 12, is really what's meaningful. And that's what Krishna wants us to do in the Bhagavad-gita. At the end, he says, this is what... Why is he speaking all of this? But what Prabhupada did is that he made all of it relevant. He gave relevance for the devotee to every page of the Bhagavad-gita by saying, no, karma yoga, okay, do action in divine Krishna consciousness. So we are, you know, when you read the Bhagavad-gita that Prabhupada wrote, that's why people become devotees. Because there is nothing else there except devotion. Every page is telling you devotion. What is going to happen when you read the book? You're going to become a devotee. What else are you going to do? You have another question? Then I'll come back to this side.
Thank you for the explanation.
Thank you.
So you mean that we qualify ourselves by doing these things, these different yoga, that's how we qualify ourselves to do bhakti?
That is one way of looking at it, but a lot of times, nishkam karma yogis are offenders to Krishna. Jnanis are offenders to Krishna. I know Lokmanya Tilak, for example, very famous freedom fighter. He was a strong proponent of karma mimamsa. He wrote the Gita Rahasya, the secret of the Gita. And all of it is karma. Karma yoga. He must fight the freedom struggle. He was writing the book in the Mandalay prison where the British had put him in jail. So his was a call to arms. We must fight. But it's nothing to do whatsoever with Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is not about karma yoga. You see? So what happens is we should be very clear as devotees how the general people understand these things, karma yoga, jnana yoga. They're not going to become devotees. Unless they acknowledge the supremacy of bhakti over everything else. Unless they acknowledge that the only process that is beyond the gunas is bhakti. There is no other method to release us from the cycle of birth and death other than bhakti. Yes.
Yes. When I ask
one last question, then there are other hands up also. Yes.
When I ask him this question, he said, of course, that we know the goal, we follow guru instructions and... Mm. If we perform in different things to qualify ourselves, you know, how is better way to do it or faster? That's why my question is.
Is other methods of yoga a faster method to get where we want to go? No. Uttam Bhakti is the fastest. Prabhupada calls it the elevator. Uttam Bhakti is the fastest, uncovered by karma and jnana. We should really understand the definition of Uttam Bhakti clearly.
You heard the joke of Atma Tattva Prabhu?
No.
He came to Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. And he said that I went with the preaching to South India, that part of Pondicherry.
Mm-hmm.
And big Mayavadi. He says, so he went there and said, oh, I have a nice Bhagavad Gita as it is. He says, I have this. I'm very angry with your guru. He said, why? He said, every word, the third chapter you said actually, but it's very relevant. Those who are little bit inclined with the Sanskrit. This is karma.
It's true.
It did not say anything with Krishna. But Prabhupada translates action in Krishna consciousness. And he said, he finds everything in Bhagavad Gita with Krishna. I'm very upset why he is making everything Krishna. So he comes back and tells Prabhupada everything what happened. Prabhupada started laughing and laughing. He said, this is the difference between impersonalist and us.
Yes. Jai Srila Prabhupada.
I think of two songs that we sing every day, Shri Guru Charna Padma, that the lotus feet of spiritual master are the only way to obtain pure devotional service in Yesha Prashada, Bhagavad Prashada. So if one's tied up with karma, jnana, he can't untie himself.
And, not possible.
Like in the Bhagavad Gita, 1854, Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param, after Brahman realization, then the door of pure devotional service. And then in the, also, Nectar Devotion says, unless one becomes a jnani, he can't stay steady in Krishna consciousness. So
the concept, like I said, is if we are not qualified for Uttam Bhakti, that means we are neither too attached to the material world nor too detached from the material world, then we are qualified for jnana or karma. Really, we are qualified either for karma yoga or for jnana yoga. But the Guru has mercifully created qualification for us to do bhakti. But he has allowed us to continue performing secondary or minor portions of jnana or minor portions of karma as secondary small portions of uttam bhakti, so that we can continue to be stable according to our inclinations in bhakti and advance. Otherwise, what will happen is, we might just give up bhakti altogether and just go away again into karma or jnana, fall back down.
So it seemed to me, maybe you can help clarify this.
Yes.
There's the mode of goodness, but it seems like Prabhupada has for us that I have an immature stage of pure devotional service or an immature stage of pure goodness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly goodness, but it's immature pure goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So it because sometimes they say you have to come to the mode of goodness, you have to do these things, but goodness, material goodness, is like completely different.
So when sadhana bhakti is given to us, either through initiation or by hearing Prabhupada's transcendental words through the year, there is a seed planted in our heart, which is Vishuddha Sattva, Ladini Shakti, and some with potencies in our heart. It is not visible. We might look like the most, what is the word Prabhupada uses? Rascal. So it might seem like that. Apiche Sudaracharo Bhajate Man Ananya Bhag Sadhureva Samantavya Samyak Devasitvaisaha. Even if just most horrible, Duracharya is bad enough, bad karma. But Suduracharya, especially bad activities. But the person has bhakti in a hidden, not visible to us, form in the heart. And that seed will fructify. And it will fructify at one point or the other. This is the idea why we do Sankirtan on the streets. We are planting innumerable seeds in the hearts of individuals that are going to manifest. They're just not visible to us. But they will manifest into a whole big tree of bhakti at one point or the other in the future. That's why Krishna says, sadhureva samantavya, do not consider that such a person as ordinary. He is still considered to be a sadhu. Ship, because shipram bhavati dharmatma, he will become a pure devotee. Shashvat shantim nivachati, tante pratijani, name bhakta pranashati. The devotee will never perish. So this gives great hope. It doesn't matter what our condition is, what our desires are, whatever. It doesn't matter. Perform bhakti. I'll come back to you, Mataji. Janmashtami Prabhu is waiting, then I'll come back to you. Just hold on to the microphone.
Yes. In the translation to Bhagavatam 1.2.19, tadarajastatamo bhavas kamalobhadayasya kitai atara anadiktam stitam sakve prasiditi. So Prabhupada, he says, as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, that means Uttama Bhakti. I'm not trying to follow up, I'm seeing it, if you have any insight. The effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desiring, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and becomes completely happy. Okay, so that's one point. But then in the next verse, evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sangha sujayate. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service, who gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material activities. It seems that just that this mode of goodness
is transcendental. It's not.
It's Sudhasattva.
Yeah, it's Sudhasattva.
And
this is Bhava Bhakti. This is not.
So because it's kind of confirmed in the way he starts the
the next translation, that's established in the mode of unalloyed goodness.
That's right. It should be sattva. So what you're talking about is bhava bhakti. We did sadhana, now we've been promoted to bhava. And then bhava, all this bliss, evam prasanna manaso, the bliss that's coming is ladini, what we're experiencing. Krishna's bliss potency directly manifesting happiness in your heart. So this is a beautiful sequence of which again underscores the fact how bhakti takes us beyond the modes of material nature.
One could be have irrevocable loving service established in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me that that's also a nishtha platform.
Yeah, but in this particular case, different acharyas, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanatha Chakravarti, they explained that this is bhava. I think I gave a lecture and I can send you the PowerPoint on this, but I gave the different commentaries and these different verses, what they're correlated with.
Okay. So
at least from my memory, I think that's correct.
So 19 is also...
Yeah, bhava is it includes nishtha, naturally. Yeah.
Right. So 19 is...
So it goes from ruchi, asakti. So all these things stages in those different verses. I can send you the PowerPoint because the different verses reflect the different stages.
Right.
And then finally, the prasanna manasa, that's bhava.
Yeah. So then another question. I haven't studied it in the depth you have, but there are some acharyas that consider nishkam karma yoga bhakti.
Who?
I'm just getting that from Burjan's quote.
Okay, I got it. I have to see the context and where this is coming from, because it flies in the face of everything. That,
there may be a different understanding of what nishkam karma yoga is.
Maybe a different understanding. It's possible.
Could you define that?
What nishkam karma yoga is?
Hmm.
Mayi sarvani karmani sannyasya dhyatma chetasa nirashir nirmamo bhutva yudhyasva yudhijvara. This is a very nice verse for me that explains it. This kayana manasa buddhya is another one. All these are different definitions of nishkam karma yoga.
Where are the verses?
Oh, these are the third chapter. These are all from the third chapter. 330. Oh, translation. Mayi sarvani karmani. Offer all activities to me, sarvani karmani. Sannyasya, adhyatma chetasa, being situated in spiritual consciousness. Nirashir, do not have any hopes for yourself. Nirmamo, nothing is mine, I am mine. Yudhyasva, but fight. Vigatajvara, without the fever of attachment to the reserves.
So why is that not bhakti?
Why is that not bhakti? It has to do with the motivation. So, like I said, yoginah karma kurvanti sangam tyaktva atma vishuddhaye. If the motivation is self-purification, which is the case with most nishkam karma yogis, if you read Karma Mimamsa, you'll see. The idea there is that I'm going to purify myself by becoming detached from the reserves. And that's when yoga sansiddha kalinatmani vindati. Then slowly the knowledge of the soul, because I've become purified by practices of nishkam karma yoga, the knowledge of the soul manifests in my heart. I get direct perception. So I become self-realized. That's another motivation for the jnanis, is to recognize and find the soul. And before. So these processes, now this understanding of the soul as a spiritual entity, understanding ourselves, right, as different from matter, is knowledge in sattva guna. Why is it in knowledge in sattva guna? Because the soul is not Krishna. Soul is marginal potency. So it can come under the control of the modes of material nature, sometimes it can be. So understanding ourselves is not a big thing. We are who we are, but unfortunately we are under the control of the modes of material nature, even though we are parts of Krishna, spiritual parts. But understanding Krishna, seeing Krishna, serving Krishna, this is all transcendent. Why is that? Because yecheva sattvika bhava rajasas tamasrasche matte eva iti tanviti natvaham teshu te mahi. All these modes, material modes, sattva, rajatuma, they come from me. They are me, I'm not in them. And the material world is deluded by these modes. Tribhir gunamayair bhavair ebhi sarvabhidam jagat mohitam na abhijanati. Because they are deluded by sattva, raja and tama, self-purification, realizing the soul, merging into Brahman, mohitam, becoming illusioned by these, na abhijanati, they do not know, mame bhya paramavyam, I am the Supreme Lord, they cannot know me. Then the next verse he says, that's why this maya is impossible to overcome. You can only overcome it if you worship me. So the entire Bhagavad Gita is a call to bhakti. by recognizing that the different processes other than bhakti are under the modes. Ragatmi Mataji? Yes. Yes.
Translation there for O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, mm-hmm. with full knowledge of me, mm-hmm. without desires for profit, mm-hmm. with no claims to proprietorship, and free from refuge of fight. Mm-hmm. Without desires for profit, it kind of implies that you're only doing please me.
Yeah, so the question is, you know, if you look at Prabhupada, like I said, when you look at Prabhupada's translation,
this is a Krishna's.
Yeah, it's all bhakti. But if you look at the 25th chapter of the 11th canto, I recommend everybody study that. You'll see work offered to me is in the mode of goodness. Krishna is saying that. Then he says work offered to this is in the mode of passion. Work to this is in the mode of goodness. And then this worker is in the mode of transcendence, person who is a devotee. So Krishna makes these distinctions very clearly. And the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita makes these distinctions over and over again. This is sattva, this is raja, this is tama. After saying all of this, Krishna says, give up all of these dharmas. And surrender to me, Mamekam, Sharanam, in the 18th chapter.
Just as Prabhupada Krishnized the yoga ladder, Virajan wrote a book called Elevation to Goodness, mm-hmm. where Prabhupada equates goodness to Krishna consciousness mm-hmm. in many places in the Bhagavatam.
It's interesting.
I'll send that to you. Sure. But that's so people don't get stuck on one yoga ladder.
Absolutely. But we have to be knowledgeable of this so we can respond to criticisms. I have been criticized when I've given lectures. People in the audience say, oh, this is perform your duty without attachment to the results. That's government. What are you talking about? You know? And then I was caught off guard. I was speechless at one point. How do I respond? So then, you know, yeah, we have to know both sides of it so we can effectively respond to those that insist on, that want to corner us by saying, no, this is what karma and jnana is. But then we distribute Prabhupada's books because we want people to become devotees. That's our goal. Yes, Mataji.
Yes, I just wanted to express my appreciation for your scholarly analysis and devotional realization on the point of the difference between Prabhupada's translation of the Bhagavad Gita and others, how he simply brings out bhakti.
Thank you.
On every page. It reminded me of the song that the Gurukul the other day sang on Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day by Narottam Das Thakur. The first two lines are like this. O Vaishnava Goswami, please be merciful to me now. There is no one except you who can purify the fallen souls. Where does anyone find such a merciful personality by whose mere audience all sins go far away? Prabhupada just rises above all the philosophers, religionists, scientists who are so proud of their knowledge and all. And the audience of Srila Prabhupada is had simply in his books as well. So it just ties in with the glorification of Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanand.